Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at consumer scams again with our friends from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. There's lots that we can talk about today. Unfortunately, a lot has happened just in the last couple of weeks, as a matter of fact. Michelle Reinen, one of the people who's going to tell us about it, she's director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Also, Laura Sutherland. Laura is the administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. So it's great to have both of them back. And so we'll be talking data breaches for sure, credit freezes, scams to watch out for. There's one involving hunting and fishing licenses here in Wisconsin you certainly want to know about as well. So maybe you have an experience or a question to ask, experience to share, give us a call. Number's 1-800-642-1234. And you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Laura Sutherland, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Thanks for having us, Larry.
Yeah, and Michelle Reinen, good to see you again, too.
Good to see you, Larry. Thanks.
Well, I tell you what, Michelle, why don't you start out talking about this Capital One business. On July 19th, Capital One announced that there had been an unauthorized access to their systems.
Yeah, so they learned just a few weeks ago that they had this unauthorized access by an individual who the FBI has gotten involved with and done the arrest and everything. So one of those situations where the culprit has been caught and identified. But what's important for consumers to know is that 100 million people in the United States and 6 million people in Canada are affected by this breach. And it's an unauthorized access to information, and they don't believe that the information's been used or redistributed by this individual. But everyone still needs to take caution. So according to Capital One, most of the stolen information came from credit card applications of consumers and small businesses, and that information includes name, dates of birth, addresses, phone numbers, and more information. And it's from a period of time where applications were filed between 2005 and early 2019. So,
big time.
What is that? 14 years nearly of potential data there. So 1 million people in the U.S., I'm sorry, 100 million people in the U.S., that's quite a large number of individuals. For credit card holders, the stolen information includes credit scores, credit limits, balances, payment history, contact information, and some transaction data. But they also say that the hacker stole about 140,000 social security numbers and then 80,000 linked bank account numbers of secured credit holders. So a lot of different data. Some of that data is what we always remind consumers to protect in relation to potential identity theft.
Right.
So, yeah, we need people to be responsive. And what does that mean? What do you do? Capital One indicates that they are going to reach out and notify the impacted consumers. They'll figure out the right means of doing that, but you should be very cautious and watchful that you don't respond to a telephone call seeking you to verify information, and you don't respond to phishing attacks by your email that might look like they're coming from Capital One trying to ask you to click this link, go here, verify, and give us all that. That's not what they're going to do. They've made a statement, we're not going to call people about this. They're going to do other means of notifications, but it's not going to involve phone calls and phishing attempts to obtain information. They're going to give credit monitoring to consumers to make sure that they can secure that. They advise consumers to put fraud alerts on their account, both their credit card account, and you should consider putting a fraud alert on your credit report. So if you're one of the people with your social security number impacted, you'd be alerted to activity on your credit report, not just with your credit card. Those are two different types of alerts and notifications there. And then consumers, monitor your bills. Always be looking for suspicious activity and report that. And then security freezes. I think we're going to talk about those a little bit more in depth, but that is something that locks down your credit report so people can't take out extensions of credit, and it's free. And we'll talk more about those details. But lots of things happening there, and we have a lot of written information that about if you're impacted by a data breach that we can send you, steps you can do, or you can go to our website so you don't have to remember it all from this conversation right now.
So there's, but people are, you know, anyone, including, you know, I have a Capital One card, and I would expect there are millions, at least a million people probably in Wisconsin that have one, and those who are listening are probably saying, okay, now we'll give you some more specifics on what I can do here.
Well, so first, flip your card over. Call that 800 number on the back, and if you don't already have a fraud alert placed on your account, your credit account, do that. Make sure that you put that fraud alert so you can be notified of suspicious activity. You should be notified of your own activity, but make sure that you receive that information. Capital One will contact you if you are one of the people who are impacted. And
will they send a letter?
Well, likely it's going to be a letter. They didn't specifically say how they're going to be doing it, but they said various means. And I think that will be part of their methodology to make sure scammers aren't impersonating that contact. But usually what we've seen is it is a letter. It's a written form, and it gives you all the details you need to know about what information was compromised, and then the details about how to obtain the services they'll provide, because they'll probably give you some kind of access to this free credit monitoring that you will be able to do. They have an entire FAQ on the Capital One website, so you can go read, you know, question answer of all the details about the breach, so you will know more information, and you can align it with the letter if you are impacted and how you receive. They're going to continue to update that information as they have more details that they're going to make available. But they also on their website provide a phone number that you can call to speak with an actual agent. I don't know at this point that agent is going to say, yes, you are impacted, but they'll know what the letter looks like and be able to confirm that when those all go out. You know, in reality, while this breach in access to acquiring the information happened a bit ago, their learning of it is in very short order in their announcement. So they are moving very quickly in response to notifying consumers and getting that out to the public so people can take that action. Put that fraud alert on your credit report. Put that fraud alert on your credit card. Two different things. One, the fraud alert on your credit report protects your Social Security number by notifying you. The alert notifications on your credit card will notify you of activity on your card, and you can identify that suspicious activity. And then the security freeze will lock down the credit report. That, again, protects your Social Security, your credit history, and your really ultimately your credit score to a degree, in that people aren't out there taking loans in your name.
Yeah, for sure. And again, to get the alert and the fraud alert for your credit report and your credit card, you go where?
So you can go to our website, and we have all the information, but you have to, for the fraud alert, go to one of the three credit reporting agencies to provide that information. They'll contact the other reporting agencies. And then to do the security freeze, you need to contact each of the three credit reporting agencies. And we have all that detailed information on our website at datcp.wi.gov. So you can go through that process.
So that's the same. Yeah. So if you go to datcp.wi.gov, and then it's going to pop up, or some information is going to pop up there.
Yeah, you can go to our publications, our fact sheets, and you want to go into the identity theft section. We have a consumer tips one, and it just will give you the putting a fraud alert on there. It will give you the information on filing a security freeze and how you do that, because we'd be talking about, you know, 4 or 5 different phone numbers right now.
Yeah. Easier to go to the datcp.wi.gov. There you've got all the information right there for you. Well, Keith in Starks has something for us that relates to this. Hi, Keith.
Hey, Larry. Like I was telling your person on the phone there.
Yeah.
I have credit monitoring through another credit card company, and they send me monthly reports on, you know, if there's any kind of credit fraud or anything. Is that sufficient when it comes to the Capital One deal? Because I do have one Capital One card.
Yeah.
So what that's going to do is it's monitoring more your credit report. Typically, credit monitoring is looking at your 3 credit reports and what's happening there, or whatever information you have provided them to monitor, whatever that scope is that you've given them access to. But the alert notification that you can get with Capital One directly, or any credit card in your wallet usually, is specific to that card and comes from that company. So they have different access points where they can either text you or call you or email you when something is happening. Some go down to, okay, we're going to let you know every time there's a charge on the card. Some spouses call that tattletaling, in that, you know, that one spouse is keeping an eye on the other one's activity, kind of in budgeting there. But it's letting you know every time something's happening with that card, or when it looks suspicious because it's out of your normal pattern and conduct, versus normal fraud alerts on the big scope is about your credit report with the 3 major credit reporting agencies. And then if you are buying one of their packages for credit monitoring, again, it's whatever scope you've given them to be monitoring. It might be your credit cards. It might be your credit report. It might also be some other financial activity that you have, banking. But you said it in your call, that's happening once a month. You need to be maybe acting more quickly if something is happening that's suspicious, or you may want to be more responsive.
Yeah, there you go, Keith. So, and Keith could just call if he doesn't remember, which most of us don't probably, when we get this sort of monitoring. He could probably call his credit card company and ask them, okay, what kind of coverage am I getting just for this? But then I think you're right about the, you know, more rapid monitoring of things. And Laura Sutherland, this reminds me a lot of the Equifax business from a couple years ago.
That's right. In 2017, you'll remember, Equifax, one of the 3 credit reporting agencies, had one of the largest breach ever in consumer protection breach history. And that happened in September of 2017. They realized they had been hacked, and 147 million accounts were hacked. 56% of American adults' data were exposed because of that hack. And the investigation of that hack determined that Equifax failed to maintain their reasonably their security systems. So what's happened recently is that Equifax settled those claims with the Federal Trade Commission, the Consumer Protection, Financial Protection Bureau, as well as 50 states' attorneys general, including the state of Wisconsin. And it's the largest settlement of data breach in data breach history. It's there, and as a part of that settlement, one of the things that DADCAP is attempting to get out into the public is the restitution, because it's quite sizable and significant. So there's a $425 million consumer restitution fund as a part of that settlement.
Okay.
And we're encouraging consumers to file a claim for that. And I'll talk a little bit about how to do that, but you can find all this information at FTC's website, www.ftc.gov/Equifax data breach. And all this information is there. But what the settlement allows folks to do is to file a claim. They have a couple options. One is they can get credit monitoring for up to 10 years for free, or many people already have credit monitoring, so they can get this $125 cash payment. There's one FTC issued a press release, I think yesterday, Michelle said, because that $125 cash payment is capped at $31 million. So a lot of consumers are actually availing themselves to the $125, and they're concerned that they're going to run out of money to be able to meet that need, that request. So the FTC is encouraging folks to opt for the credit monitoring if you don't already have it for 10 years. It's really important to do that for all the reasons that Michelle just described. In addition to that, that piece of the settlement restitution fund, consumers that think they were affected by that breach and may have had to do some work to protect their identity are entitled to be paid for the work that they've done. The expenses that they experienced trying to protect their identity that was exposed to the breach. And some of the expenses that can be paid back through the settlement are losses from unauthorized charges to your accounts, the cost of freezing or unfreezing your credit report, the cost of credit monitoring, because up until this point, that credit monitoring was not free, fees you may have paid to professionals like an accountant or an attorney to resolve that information being exposed, and then other expenses like notary fees, document shipping fees, postage, etc. So folks can ask for reimbursement for that up to 10 hours. After 10 hours, they're going to ask you to tell them about it, but then also provide supporting documentation that you've been exposed to identity theft or fraud or misuse of your information. So that's a lot of information. And again, you can find all of that information at the FTC's website. And then if you want to file a claim, the claim is made actually through Equifax's website, EquifaxBreachSettlement.com. One of the things that we're encouraging folks to do is to commence that claim process from the FTC's website. And this is the reason for this, Michelle touched on when she was talking about the Capital One breach. One of the things that happened in the aftermath of a breach and a settlement is that there are scammers that try to take advantage of you.
Oh, sure.
So there can be spoof websites, pop-ups that will say, oh, it looks like you were affected by the Equifax breach. File a claim here. We're really encouraging consumers not to respond to that. Equifax, the FTC, and the state's attorneys general will not be reaching out to you in the form of a pop-up or a call or any of that. It's incumbent on the consumer to make the claim and take the initiative themselves. So any pop-ups directed at you, you can assume that's a scam. You should go to the FTC's website and start there to commence your claim.
So lots of good information from our two guests today from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Michelle Ryan and Laura Sutherland. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Join in. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at consumer scam issues. We've been looking at the data breach issues with Capital One and Equifax with our two guests from the Division of Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland. So it's great to have them with us. and join in with your own at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Laura, there was an additional, there's a deadline for filing, wasn't there?
That's right. On the Equifax settlement, the deadline for filing is January 2020. We encourage people to go ahead and get on top of it now, particularly because of that cap on the $125. But just to get that credit monitoring in place and start getting it resolved. If you are unsure whether you are affected, there's a lookup tool on FTC's website. You can figure out whether or not you were affected by the breach.
Let's take a call. Bill in Spooner will go to you now. Bill, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Larry. I was listening to all the actions a person should take regarding the Capital One data breach. It seems to me that it would make sense to just cancel your Capital One card. That you don't have to worry about at least some of the elements of them defrauding on your credit card, and I wouldn't mind punishing Capital One for leaving the barn door open.
Okay, Bill. Well, Michelle, what do you think?
Well, that is certainly a decision that an individual consumer can make to cancel it, because it would be something that account wouldn't be compromised anymore. They'll be watching that, certainly, Capital One will, if you are one of the impacted consumers. So it really just becomes a decision. I don't think that will prohibit you from any of their offerings as being impacted by the breach, but it's bigger and larger. They have your date of birth, potentially, the name, the address, phone numbers, email addresses. If you're one of the 140,000, Social Security number. If you're one of the 80,000, maybe bank account information, you know, that routing info. So, it removes one item off the list of things to do to protect your identity, and that certainly is an option.
Somebody else was wondering, well, could I just quit that card and then sign up for a new card from them, because it's probably pretty safe right now.
Oh, well, if it's with them, I mean, they're going to decide whether or not they're going to assign new numbers. That happens with any breach, whether, you know, if you go back to Target, you know, years ago now, probably nearly a decade ago, your financial institution had to decide whether or not your card was part of the Target data breach, whether or not it made sense for them to issue you a new number. Not all of them did that process. So that will be a company decision.
All right. Bill, thank you again. Let's take another call on a different issue, I believe. Camille in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Camille.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. On the issue that you were talking about before, you can also put an alert that says that any loan or financial transaction of a large quantity, like taking out a loan or opening up a new account, you must have a photo ID. And because I've had my identity compromised more than once, and now when I opened up a home equity loan, they said you have a photo ID that we have to see to verify who you are, even though it's a bank that I've been with for years. So you can do that as well. I have a question about the spoofing calls. I called your agency because my number has been spoofed, and I don't understand how they can actually call me with my own number, and it doesn't ring as a busy signal to them.
Yeah.
Well, so that's the magic of spoofing, if you will, or the nuisance of spoofing, is that that's not actually the number that they're calling from to call you. That's what they're making your caller ID appear and read. So they know the number they're dialing, which is yours, and then they can make a program that says, and that's the same number I want to appear on the caller ID, as opposed to the number they're using to actually make that call and connect with you. So it doesn't have to be your number. It can be the local bank. It can be a utility company. We've seen it with the Social Security Administration and the IRS appearing. That's what spoofing is, misrepresenting the caller ID to make it appear as something else other than the number they're actually using to call you from.
You wonder if those folks would just spend so much time that they spend on trying to scam people, if they would put that to productive use.
Yes.
Because there's To be perfectly honest, there got to be some pretty smart people trying to do this. Why not do it for good rather than
evil?
Evil.
I'll say it, evil.
You just wonder sometimes about it. Camille, thanks a lot for calling. You can join in too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Certainly love to hear from you with your own questions, consumer questions. Well, you know, I was thinking about the recent weather, some friends who in central and north Wisconsin that had a bunch of trees down and home damage and things of that nature. And that always seems to bring out some scammers as well, Laura.
That's right, Larry. And it's unfortunate because you're right. We've had some significant storms and flooding. And to see folks take advantage of that is unfortunate, but it does happen. Storm chasers, we like to call them, move from community to community and knocking on doors, trying to take advantage of a vulnerable situation and sell you poor quality work or no work at all and can be fraudulent. And so we always like at this time of year and after a storm event, like to talk about these transient workers that we see going through communities, encourage people to do a couple things. First of all, if you're house or property has been affected by a storm, it may be covered by insurance. So before you engage a contractor, and certainly one that just shows up at your doorstep, you should contact your insurance company to find out whether or not it's covered. And you should be methodical about that. You should take pictures of the damage, keep receipts, really do your homework and make sure that you can document all the harm that's been done and find out if your insurance company will cover it. If you find that you've got to get a contractor, do what you would do anytime when you're not in an urgent situation and ask family and friends for a recommendation. You can also call DADCAP and do a business inquiry and find out if there's a complaint against the contractor that you're considering. We have a nice database. We're happy to look up contractors for you and tell you whether or not we've got complaints against them. You can also do that at the BBB. And then if someone comes to your door, you should ask whether or not they're allowed to be going door to door. A lot of municipalities require registration. And so you should find out, is this a legitimate business? Have they let the municipality know that they're there and they're going to be knocking on residents' doors and asking to help? So make that inquiry. But if someone is urging you to do it quickly and that they want to do the work that day, really slow your roll, as my kids say, and think about that. Because a lot of these folks could steal your money outright. And once that happens, once they come in and take the money and don't do the work and they're gone, it's a lot harder to get it back. Or if they do shoddy work and don't have a contract or a lien waiver or all of the things that the law requires, and then they're gone, also difficult to resolve that. So we really encourage folks to look out for these folks. And then the other thing is, if you see them, even if you don't fall prey to them, give a call to DADCAP and let us know they're in your community, because then we can do some press in your community and let other people know there are folks in your community. You should be wary about that and prevent your community members from being defrauded as well.
Yeah, when something like that happens, of course, the local contractors are there's an avalanche of, and they get behind in their work. And so it's tempting to want to go to somebody like that, that who just stops in and says, oh, I can do it right now. But don't do that.
Don't do that. Exactly.
Don't do that. Okay. Teresa in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Teresa. Teresa, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, what can we do for you today?
I received two calls about 3 weeks apart. They said it was Microsoft. First of all, I did not answer the phone. I don't answer the phone unless it goes on to my answering machine. And, of course, I didn't answer these calls. They said that my Microsoft contract ran out, and that they wanted information as far as used to reinstate it. I believe it has to be a scam because I've never had this before. I do have a Microsoft, but they never even asked me who I was also. So I just ignored it, but I thought I would just give you a call.
Yeah, well, I think Michelle, Teresa was probably right to just ignore it.
She was absolutely correct to ignore it. This is a new twist that the scam has taken on. It's no longer necessarily that they're calling to say your computer is sending off virus waves and that they can fix it in that moment. It's that your contract for doing this monitoring to protect you from viruses is canceling, and so now it's time to renew it. So a little bit different twist, same basic tech support scam where they're going to want you to pay and maybe have access to your computer as well so they can check it because your contract had run out. So we'll just do a little check there, and we need to, you know, make sure consumers are not engaging in this. We're also in a period of time where the real Microsoft has indicated, look, we're done with Windows 7 now, we're moving on. And yeah, so a lot of people who have older computers who didn't like the other variations and wanted the 7 instead of when they went to the 10, you know, are in a position where that is not going to be supported anymore, and we're worried about scams around that. Microsoft does not call you out of the blue unsolicited, so just be sure you're not responding to that regardless of what the person is saying and what opportunity they're trying to present you with.
So, Teresa, you did the right thing. Thank you so much for calling. And you can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jim had called and couldn't stay online, wondering about what national agencies are involved in data breaches. Well, I guess we'd call Capital One. Is that a national agency, or is it...
Well, if he's wondering what law enforcement responds to different data breaches, it is going to depend on what's happened. But local law enforcement, FBI is the one that made the arrest with this, depending upon the type of data. I imagine Secret Service or even Homeland Security could be involved in something. And after effect, the Federal Trade Commission will be looking at things because they'll want to know what the privacy policies and statements and red flag rules were that were the company had in place to make sure that those were being followed by the company as well. So there are many local, state, and federal agencies that take a look at different breaches. And again, it depends on the impact in different pieces there. And this one, had Canadian citizens involved as well. So it may also be some international law enforcement agencies.
Another Jim had something to add. He says when he gets a call, he picks it up but doesn't say anything, and then he says robocalls will just hang up. But should he even be picking up is the question there, Laura.
I think that he shouldn't be picking up. That's what we encourage folks to ignore them entirely. And the reason is when you pick up the phone, and certainly when you press buttons, you are engaging with the caller. You're indicating it's a live line by picking up. You're indicating a whole host of things when you're pressing numbers that they ask you for prompts. So it's best to just let it go to voicemail or not answer it at all rather than picking it up.
Justin in Black Creek has a question, I believe. Hi, Justin.
Hi there. Yeah, there's lots of scams, especially on the internet now with cryptocurrency. That's what I wanted to talk about. They have scams where they'll take a prominent figure, someone that you follow, like for instance, Katy Perry or the president, and they'll mimic their social media account, and they will put a post up saying, "You donate some cryptocurrency to me, and in return, you'll get double the cryptocurrency back." And really, it's just a scam, and they're just going to take your money. So I'd say watch out for the crypto world, too, because it's the same scenario.
Yeah. Justin, thanks for calling. Michelle, a comment.
certainly, he's describing that accurately. We've seen different scams where fake charities will use the popularity of an individual to say that they support that and try and redirect from an imposter social media site, just as described, to get individuals to donate to this pretend or fake charity. And here you think you're doing good by helping animals or, you know, different diseases and things, and it's not actually going to the national well-known
group
that is trying to support those causes.
Yeah. Thanks, Justin. I appreciate it very much. Louis in Wausau will go to you next. Hi, Louis.
Hi. Twice in about the last month, I've got a call. A grandpa, I've gotten a car accident in Miami, and I'm in jail, and they want to put me through to the public defender who will tell me where I should send the money. And, my grandson is 4 years old, so that's probably not. The somewhat disconcerting thing is when I get to the public defender, he knows my last name. You know, he'll say, well, now, mister, and he'll use my last name. And I wonder how they get that. It's on a cell phone.
Yeah. Okay.
So, Louis, you're actually calling the public defender?
He's what's happening is the first person says, oh, well, let me put you on to the public defender. And so they, quote, unquote, transfer the call.
I see. Right. So that's a basic grandparent scam, we like to call them. And they come in the form of I'm in trouble. Your grandchild is usually in trouble. They're in jail. They're overseas. They're sick.
In an accident.
In a car accident. I mean, they're really using the heartstrings of a grandparent that wants to come and help their grandchild in a terrible situation. And so absolutely, you should, you're right to be suspicious of that. And you had the opportunity to know right off that your four-year-old wasn't in jail. He may be a troublemaker, but not of that magnitude, I would imagine. But so exactly, we tell folks that when this kind of thing happens, you shouldn't engage with them at all. And certainly we like to tell people to, like, when it is a traveling grandparent scam, in other words, when the caller says, oh, your grandchild is in Thailand and needs help, you know, be aware of what's happening in your family's life, whether or not folks are traveling and know about whether that's happening. And also, we encourage folks to
passwords right. That can be distributed should there be an actual emergency.
Absolutely. So in general, don't answer the calls if you don't know the phone number. Let it go to voicemail. And if you happen to find yourself in a conversation about a tragedy, hang up and call somebody you trust and find out whether or not it's true, if you actually are concerned that it's true. But these are out there, and having some safety checks in your family, knowing where people are, passwords, things of that nature to really keep yourself safe is the best way to go.
And thanks a lot for calling, Louie. Appreciate your call. Visiting today with Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. They're within the Division of Consumer Protection. It's great to have them with us. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at consumer scam issues today with our two guests from the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Michelle Reinen is the director. Laura Sutherland is administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. So great to have them both with us today. And certainly you can join in, too, with your questions, comments, or maybe experiences to share. We'll go to Scott in Fredonia next. Scott, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yes. My question is the person who did the Capital One break-in, they've apprehended her. Do they know if they got her before she distributed the information, or did she still have it on her?
So it's a good question, Scott. My knowledge is from the news reports that I've been reading, but as I understand it, she actually bragged about having done it on a hacker site, and she was quickly apprehended and had not actually done anything with the data. So we haven't heard anything to the contrary from Capital One or any of the other agencies looking into this, or the ones that have prosecuted her. The news reports as it stands now is they were able to seize her and no data had been released.
You wonder what's going to happen to her. She could be looking at some long jail time, couldn't she? I would think.
I would think so. When apparently she made that comment and people suggested to her on the website, that could be illegal. And in fact, it was. So.
There we go, Scott. Thanks for calling. Bob in Washington Island, your turn now. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
I had a deal where I had a new roof put on, and then when winter came, I found out that they had never put ice and rain protection underneath it, which they said they were going to do. So I went to small claims court, and I won the case. But how do you collect any money from that? It was, you know, a $10,000 deal.
Oh,
yeah. Sometimes collection can be difficult when you get the award and judgment from the courts. But there is the means of going through the courts. And there's if they don't pay the judgment, if there are wages, you can apply to garnish wages to have the payment made. But that is an additional, you know, court proceeding in pieces there. But that's the process that's available to consumers.
So you don't go back through small claims court. You have to go probably talk to a lawyer, I would guess.
Do you know, Laura, the following to garnish wages, what that process is? It's again, through the courts. I'm not sure at which court level it takes place, but it would be available on the websites
right.
for the courts.
Right, right. I'm not. I think you would have to ask an attorney. I'm not entirely sure how to unring that bell.
Okay. And good luck with that, Bob. Thank you very much for calling. Jane in Elroy, it's your turn. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Hello.
Hi. What can we do for you today?
The other day I got a phone call from some lady. She left a message on my phone, and she said, she could help me with my student loans. And I told her, I thought to myself, well, I'm 78 years old. I don't need any more education, and I don't have any student loan. So I blocked that number, and I haven't heard back from them. So that's just my story.
Oh, thanks, Jane, for calling. That's this time of the year, maybe?
Well, it's an interesting call, Jane. So a couple things. The largest growing group of consumers affected by student loans right now are over 60. And that's because student debt has just mushroomed, and older individuals and grandparents are taking on not only their own debt for getting reeducated, because perhaps maybe a change in business or a change in lifestyle, but also they're carrying the debt of their children. Mm-hmm. So oddly enough, 60-year-olds and older are carrying a lot of student loan debt, unfortunately. There's $1.4 trillion of student loan debt in the mm-hmm. country, and some of that is carried by older people. The other thing I want to touch on, and I'm glad you called, is there are a lot of student loan debt consolidation companies that are frauds, and they do target folks through emails, telemarketing, pop-ups on your social media telling you they can help you settle your loan. And that's because, as I say, there's so much debt out there. And anytime there's a mountain of debt, there are going to be people trying to take advantage of those in debt and telling them they can help them. What folks need to know about student loan debt is that there are federal programs for your federal loans that allow you an income-based repayment plan. And that information about which plan you should be in can be provided to you by the federal government for free. So anytime a person is calling saying, I can get you into an income-based repayment plan or consolidate your loans, just pay me a small fee or a fee every month, know that all of that information can be acquired from the federal government for free, and you don't need to pay for it. And the other thing that that call makes me want to tell folks about is that some of these places, not only are they charging you for information that you can get for free, they're just taking your money fraudulently. They're actually making you pay for something, and they're not paying down your loans. They're not actually putting you in the right program that you should be put in, the right repayment program that you should be in. And they can cost you a significant amount of money, because if you're in the wrong program or you're not paying down your loans, that interest is compounding. And we're talking about thousands and sometimes tens of thousands of dollars as a result of that fraud. So one more thing to add to this, the FTC recently shut down a student loan debt relief scheme that looks just like this. More than 42 million Americans, as I say, now have $1.5 trillion in student loan debt. And that's why these scammers target it. The FTC went after a company, Mission Hills Federal and Federal Direct Group, that bilked out of student loan borrowers $23 million.
Hmm.
And like I was describing, they lured in student borrowers with false promises to pay down their student loan debts for low monthly payments. They lied about servicing their loans. They tricked people into submitting them their loan payments. Another thing they did, which a lot of these debt settlement companies do, is they asked you for your federal ID, your federal student aid IDs. And what that ID does, it allows you to log in to the database to look at your loans. Well, what they did was they asked the student borrowers for these federal IDs. They took them, they logged in on behalf of those student borrowers, and then they changed the information. So the student borrowers were no longer getting information about their account. These scammers were. So when they stopped paying down their loans, the student borrowers had no idea, because their information in the database had been changed to direct all of the outgoing information to the to this scam operation. So we really encourage student borrowers not to take on these. It's so incredible. We can help you with all your student loan solicitations. Contact the federal government, the DOE, or DADCAP, and we can direct you to where you should get legitimate information.
Oh, boy. If it isn't one thing, it's another. Sarah in Cross Plains, we'll go to you next. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Yesterday, I got an email telling me a password that, a very simple password that I had used years ago on things that I didn't need to be secure, and I haven't used in a long time. But it says, "Hello, I know your password is Kiki Kiki," was the password. "And your computer was infected with my RAT, remote administration tool. Your browser wasn't updated or patched. In such case, it's enough to just visit some website where my iframe is placed to get automatically infected. If you want to find out more, Google Drive-by exploit." And then it goes on to say that they have full control over my computer, and it was also possible to spy on my web through my webcam. And then they're asking for $800 in bitcoins.
Yeah. I have a friend who have had a very similar experience not a week ago, as a matter of fact, Michelle, and it's a big scam, isn't it?
Yeah, this is one of those ransomware scares, a bit of a scam in that they are making threats and scaring you and providing you some information that they may have obtained through a breach somewhere along the way, or maybe you did get a virus and someone was collecting some data. But when it's a true lockout in ransomware, I know, Larry, you have all the computer tech support people on, but you shut down the computer and you recover to a previous day's package, and then you go through and clean and cleanse your computer and run everything, but you don't have to fall victim to the ransomware and have them hold you hostage. But this is also why it's really important to back up all your data as well, so you can on an external hard drive, so you cannot fall victim to these ransomware claims.
Sarah, thank you so much for calling. Rick in Monona, your turn. Hi, Rick.
Hi, I'm kind of appalled as I sit here listening to all these stories about people that are getting scammed. There are people out there that all they're trying to do is rip off their fellow citizens. And it's kind of depressing. But the reason I called is about the Equifax settlement, that the Equifax was hacked and there was a settlement, and there's something about $125, but you have to actually make a claim to get it. Can you illuminate everyone about the Equifax settlement?
Oh, we just did that about 15 minutes ago, Rick, but I'll tell you what, we will be able to talk about that again, and probably we'll review it at some time during the program. So please do stay listening as we visit with our two guests, Michelle Reinen. She directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Lara Sutherland is the administrator for the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection for the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection. We'll be visiting with them actually right up until 12:30 today. So we'll review that again at some point, and also certainly take your question or your comment. So I hope you'll join in. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with our guests. You stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking consumer scam issues with Lara Sutherland, Administrator for the Division of Consumer Protection, and Michelle Reinen. She's Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. So great to have them with us today. Advice on how to handle a consumer problem? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And lots of callers online, so we'll go right back to the phones and to Sharon in Madison next. Hi, Sharon. What can we do for you?
Hi. Hey, I was listening to Michelle and Laura a little bit earlier, again, about the Equifax thing. I don't need more explanation. I just have a question. If they were warning to go to do a claim through the FTC website instead of one of the ones that pops up on Facebook, or you get an email, if we've already done that and not done it through the FTC and done it through one of the others, is there anything we can do, go back and take care of that and remove that? And or should we go ahead and do a claim through the FTC website?
Yeah, so Sharon, you should absolutely go and try to determine whether or not a valid claim has been filed. I'm concerned about you having responded to a pop-up. If you put any information in that pop-up, like a social security number or any financial information, I think you should absolutely call your credit agency and put a freeze on your account. They are not pop-ups that are soliciting claims, so I'm concerned that maybe you filled out a scam pop-up. And what you can do is FTC.gov /Equifax data breach describes how to file a claim. On the FTC's website, there is a link for filing a claim. It will transport you to Equifax's website, and that's where the claim form is going to be filled out. But what I would suggest you do, since you've already responded to a pop-up, is call the settlement administrator, and that phone number is 1-833-759 2982. That's 1-833-759-2982. For more information, let them know what you've done. And I'd look over your credit report to make sure that nothing has been compromised, because if you have put financial information or personal identifying information into a pop-up, you very well may have compromised your identity.
Yeah. Does that help, Sharon?
Yes. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thanks, Sharon. Art in Beaver Dam, it's your turn. Hi, Art.
Hi, Larry. I've been listening to your show since the 90s. I want to thank you and your guests for the attention to these topics today.
Thank you.
These are very important. My first thought is I'm still getting scam phone calls, and I've got Nomal Robo and Verizon protection, and the calls still come through. That's a minor point. The thing that I actually called about was I've been receiving emails from my credit union asking me to fill out surveys for my experience in their credit union. And I went down to them today to check if they were for real. And then I explained that I will not be responding through those emails, because I've been instructed for years by security experts to never follow a link in an email. And, I basically feel like they're as big a part of the problem as the hackers are for using such a weak system that, you know, I could easily be following a link that was nefarious.
Yeah. Michelle, a comment. Thanks a lot, by the way, Art, for calling.
Yeah, we certainly hear from small businesses and larger businesses that the environment today with the scam artists and all the tricks that they try and use, and phishing and scams and robocalls and spoofing, is a conundrum for businesses trying to communicate with their customers and get feedback from them so they can improve or deliver other products and services. But not clicking on links is the best protection an individual consumer can have, because of the talents of the scam artists to impersonate the companies. So to me, what you're doing is an excellent practice. It's obviously what you hear us say every time we're on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something that I know businesses are trying to figure out a way to overcome.
And I just had a very similar thing from my credit union. Oh, I got an email from the credit union, and I'm like, is that the right thing to click on? So I actually went to my credit union, right to the link that I actually had,
mm-hmm.
and looked to see if there were any messages. And in fact, there was a message. So then I went to the message through the credit union app that I have. And was able to respond in that fashion.
Oh, that's great. So, you know, they're finding ways to adapt to still getting the feedback in different tools that you can log into securely to communicate.
Yeah, and two-factor authentication and all that. It's really, you feel pretty safe then. So thank you, Art, for that information, for that reminder. Candy in Rhinelander, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Candy.
Hi. I feel kind of foolish, but listening to everybody else, maybe I'm not that foolish. I was recuperating from an illness, and I was on Facebook almost every day. There was an offer from Walmart for a $1,000 gift card if you played this game and got to level 18. So I played the game, I got to level 23, and nothing happened. So I actually was so ticked off that I called Walmart, talked to somebody in IT. They said, yeah, that's not us, and we can't do anything about it. It's coming from overseas. Now, I've since seen offers from Visa for a $1,000 gift card, or even Pizza Hut for free pizza. I bypass all those now, but I don't understand how they can use Walmart's name to hook you into that, and Walmart can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Well, they're not using the name with Walmart's permission, you know, and there's that. And Walmart will have to decide how they want to proceed as it relates to legal services and use of that. And sometimes where it's coming from, it could just be an unsuccessful effort to do that. But yes, games, playing different, what would be my spirit animal name, or different surveys that you can fill out to receive gift cards or enticements, are all data collection methods that scam artists use so that they can, you know, really target you for some of these specific scams, or try and get pieces of your identity and information together. But they're all different tools to their trade, if you will, in how they are gathering data for consumers. So we really encourage not playing the online games. Don't fall for the enticements to get the free gift cards, or figure out, you know, what your British name would be if you were a royal. Because that was really during the last British wedding, the royal wedding. That was a big online game scheme of figure out what your royal name would be. And they were just collecting data.
Thank you very much, Candy, for calling. Appreciate it. Before we go back to the phones, we had a warning from the Department of Natural Resources that I just wanted to bring up that relates to hunting and fishing licenses, a kind of a scam involving that. Michelle.
Yeah, so they put out this warning, and we're helping pass it along because it's things that we have seen in other avenues. It's very similar. They're aware of at least two websites that appear to offer fishing or hunting license. And what happens is, after the consumer pays the fee, what you receive is only information on how to apply for a hunting and fishing license. So the sites are collecting, some of them are collecting sensitive personal data as part of that unauthorized transaction. So if you have listened to past shows, we've certainly heard from consumers that have tried to go get a driver's license and provide information online to do their renewal, and gone through that process and they've paid, but it's not been our DOT government website. It's been a air quotes, service offering to help you do a renewal. And that's very similar to this. We've seen it with different grant scams. Here, apply for this grant, but they send you a book of 1,000 grants that are available for a fee. You're not actually applying and paying for a grant. So be very cautious of these kinds of offerings when you are Googling or searching for a government renewal, a government license, a government registration. You always want to end up with a .gov. Go to the official state website for that agency ending in .gov. They may redirect you to a service center through their site as to who's doing that, but don't end up with a .com, a .net, a .org to be making these payments. And as it relates to getting your fishing license or hunting, you can get it at a DNR service center, an independent license agent that's authorized by the DNR, so maybe your local bait and tackle shop, or from the official DNR website, the online license site that sells, and it's the Go Wild. So be sure you end up going to these official government locations.
Craig in Cornucopia has something for us. Hi, Craig.
Hi. I had something happen earlier this week. Both of my daughters got a call from a number. They left a message saying that they've been looking for me and were unable to deliver what sounded like a warrant or something. They had my proper address. So I gave the guy a call. It was a lawyer office in Riverside, California, called Abel and Dorsey. And he's trying to tell me that I have a debt from a credit card from probably 15 years ago that I never paid. And he's trying to collect $6,000 from me.
Well, I wonder if that's from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe.
Yes. So thanks for calling, Craig. Debt collection is regulated in the state of Wisconsin. So a couple things. It could be an imposter. You could not actually have that debt. And it's he's just trying to scare you. A lot of times fake debt collectors will call and intimidate folks, threaten them with lawsuits or arrest, and some of the more vulnerable people in our community fall victim to that because it's scary. If it's a valid debt or a debt that you may have incurred, debt in this state expires after a period of time and it's uncollectible. Or I shouldn't say that. It expires and they can't file a lawsuit against you for it. And so it's a certain not all debt, but certain types of debt are. So you could talk to an attorney about that. One thing I will say is bad debt is sold on the internet and it's sold by third party collectors, and they will use tactics to try to get folks to pay for debt that they wouldn't have to pay for otherwise. So I'm not sure which bucket you might fall into, but the Department of Financial Institutions is the agency that regulates debt collection in this state. Debt collectors have to be registered, and there are regulations that they have to follow, and there are certain things that they can't do, and threatening people with lawsuits and such can fall outside of the prohibited practices. So we encourage you to file a complaint with the Department of Financial Institutions, and they can tell you whether or not what this individual is doing is violating our laws, or it ultimately could just be a fake debt collector who's trying to do a shakedown, and you should ignore it.
So go to the Wisconsin Department of Financial Institutions?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There you go, Craig. Thank you very much for calling. Karen in Rhinelander, it's your turn. Hi, Karen.
Yeah, thank you so much for all the heads up. Going back to Equifax,
yeah.
I was affected by that and didn't do anything. And I'm wondering about the option of electing 10 years of credit monitoring. And who does the monitoring? Is it Equifax?
I'm betting.
It is. Yes, it is Equifax. And you have time to do it. We encourage you to go ahead and do it sooner rather than later if you're interested in filing a claim. But the deadline is not, as we say, until January 2020. But it is Equifax that would be doing the monitoring, yes. And you can get more information about all of that at the FTC website. There's actually a very nice FAQ for all the kinds of questions you may have about the settlement. It's a pretty robust settlement, and there may be some more information there for you. And it's at ftc.gov/Equifax databreach.
And that goes back to the caller who wondered about the $125. All that information is at that ftc.gov/Equifax databreach?
Correct.
Okay. There we go, Karen. Thank you so much. Let's turn to Robert in Viroqua next. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Yeah, well, we got scammed pretty bad lately. My wife has moved to Sedona, Arizona, and I'm still in Viroqua, and we were looking for a place to rent. We went on Craigslist and found a place that worked for us, got a hold of the owner, supposedly, and had his phone number, talked to him, seemed like a really nice gentleman, went through the whole process. He sent us a contract, a rental agreement with all the bells and whistles in regards to regulations and rules, and had several conversations with him. And every time we talked to him, something would change in regards to utilities. And then suddenly he asked for an additional $500 for partial rent for September. We sent him, unfortunately, a cashier's check for the first month and the security deposit. So it was $2,200 we sent him. And we sent him some resumes, some referrals, and we found out that he never checked on any of the referrals. So we started to get a bit suspicious. We got a hold of a real estate person in Sedona who looked it up for us and found out that he definitely was not the owner. And so we're out at this point $2,200. And we filed a police report in Sedona, and they're apparently investigating it.
Oh, boy. Michelle, that's a kind of a sad story.
It is. It's one that we unfortunately do hear from time to time, whether it be for vacations or true property rentals for like a permanent lease if someone's moving to a new location. One additional thing I'm hopeful that you will do, Robert, is that you will also contact Craigslist and report that this happened to you, because they often put alerts and scams and things to be watchful for that are happening on their site, and sometimes they'll take down different posts. But it's likely that this person probably found a real estate post of the photo of the place and then made up a whole storyline. And we often encourage consumers to look for all the symptoms that you explained, that things are constantly changing, that they maybe only want you to wire money or pay in a way that's unrecoverable as opposed to a credit card or using a PayPal or something that would have some form of potential protection behind it, that you will never you interacted with this person, but you'll never meet. The key will be left under the door. Another thing to often do if you're looking at something longer term is to see if often ownership records can be on a city assessor's website or a public site, so you can see who the owners of different properties are in some locations. And so you can see if that aligns or matches, if they're claiming to be the owner as opposed to a property manager. But it's really important to file that police report as you did, contact Craigslist, and if you've paid by credit card or some other means that's trackable, file a complaint with Consumer Protection so we can help that way as well.
There you go, Robert. Thank you so much for calling in and some good information for other people as well. So we appreciate it very much. Thank you. Bill in Viroqua, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill. How are you? Hi, this is Bill. I got a new one yesterday. They called and said, well, veiled threats against my Social Security if I didn't admit it. Immediately call this number, you know. So of course I said I'm not in the mood for scams today, but you know, that's a new one on me. They've tried to get my Medicare card number and all that, but never mind. So we'll do something about your Social Security.
Oh boy, and that's another one, Laura. That it's kind of sad. Because some people will fall for it. Bill didn't. That's a good thing.
That is right. Good for you, Bill. But you're right. Some people fall for it. You'll remember in February, rather, the FTC reported $17 million lost to a Social Security scam, just like the one you described, Bill, where folks are calling and threatening that something is wrong with your account and to ask you for a gift card to pay them to help them fix it. Which reminds me, there was a Medicare scam that the FTC is alerting folks about similar. The Medicare imposters are calling and suggesting that they'll give you a free DNA test to screen you for cancer in exchange for your Social Security number and other important information. So this may seem surprising, but Medicare is not giving away free DNA tests, Larry. But people fall for these things. So Michelle said earlier, the government is not going to reach out to you in that way. Be sure you're contacting the government on a website that ends in GOV, the numbers that you know well, and don't take unsolicited calls for your Social Security number.
And on that note, there were a lot of things we didn't cover, but a lot of what we haven't covered or any of the consumer information is available on your website.
Absolutely. We have literally hundreds of publications at datcp.wi.gov. If you don't have access online, just call 1-800-422-7128 and tell the hotline what you're looking for, and they can identify some things to send out.
Michelle and Laura, thank you both so much. Appreciate it. We'll look forward to your next visit, October 3rd, the next time you're on. Thank you very much for being with us. Michelle Reinen and Laura Sutherland, from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. They'll be back on October 3rd. Tomorrow on Garden Talk, we'll talk about compact plants and how these small structured plants can help solve gardening problems. In the meantime, hey, stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.